ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
During the Vietnam War, the U.S. Air Force was involved in a secret mission to train a group of Hmong airmen in Laos to fly military planes. It was part of a campaign by the CIA working behind the scenes in that country. That program remained shrouded in mystery until the 1990s, when Freedom of Information requests brought it to light. Up until now, little has been known about the Hmong pilots who were working on behalf of the Americans in this covert action. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to hear their fascinating story that's been pieced together by a UWM history professor, Chia Yuyi Vang. Professor Vang herself was among the thousands of Hmong refugees who were given safe passage to the United States following the Vietnam War. She's just completed a book on the topic. It's called Fly Until You Die, an oral history of Hmong pilots in the Vietnam War. Joining Chia on the program is Tim McCown. He's a former U.S. Air Force flight instructor who helped train those Hmong pilots, and he comes to us on the phone today from his home in Houston. Chia, Tim, welcome to the program today.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
Chia, let's begin with you. This is an amazing story, and I'm frankly in awe that you were able to literally piece it together because you traveled the country to track down these Hmong pilots.
Sure. Well, I'll just quickly begin by saying that this project wasn't my idea, and I want to tell the truth. Because I think that if it had been something, a project that I wanted to pursue, I don't think I would have been able to do it exactly the way I did. That's very long story short. That's because it is really the Hmong pilots who came together after four decades and beginning to want to document their experiences, seeing their friends coming to meet together in wheelchairs and seeing that their stories were actually dying as each one of them passed away. So they are the ones who actually contacted me and needed some help. So it was their idea about documenting, keeping those stories alive, and remembering the people who actually passed away. They were killed in action and never had a chance to, you know, be with their families. So it was a collaboration. It was a community collaboration. They are the ones who reconnected with each other, and they're the ones who shared information about individuals like Tim, who provided very, very important information for this project. So that's how I came to this project. I mean, I am a Vietnam War historian, but this particular aspect of the Vietnam War was not my idea to study from the beginning. So I don't take all the credit. I think it is really the pilots themselves and their family who wanted to remember. And then I just became the individual who had the privilege to work with them to make sure that this story didn't pass away with them.
Chia, is the fact that you are Hmong yourself, was that central to them trusting you and believing that you were the right person to tell this story?
Well, I think absolutely, because again, very long story short, but many of the pilots came to the United States, and like many other
they
refugees,
were refugees. They
yes,
fled
yeah,
the country.
Absolutely, many of them lived quietly. They had professions. They worked and lived all over the country, but it was really a 2010 effort by the then Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Air Force, Craig Dering, who had been an American pilot. He had been one of the Raven pilots who flew with Hmong pilots and Lao and others as well in Laos. He reconnected with one of the Hmong individuals that he worked with in Laos, Ye Kha. And so at the time, he brought Ye to the Pentagon Airmen Hall for a small recognition ceremony. And then from then, 2010, the group decided that it wasn't just Ye who worked with the Americans, that there were other pilots around the country as well. So they began an effort to remember together. So in 2012, they had a reunion of the pilots. And this is really the beginning of our documentation process. One of the spouse of Peng Ying is one of the pilots. He's the later cohort, so he didn't see very much action during the war because he was one of the younger individuals who finished. But his wife and I knew each other when I lived in the Twin Cities, and she knew I was a history professor. So when the group was looking for someone to help them, as I describe in the book, she thought of me, and in fact, she contacted me to ask for a student to help the group. But long story short, I decided that it was a project that a student couldn't have accomplished because of the extensive research that it required, and then also the resources that required to travel all over the country. So I think they didn't know me. Gao Liyang is her name, but she knew me and she introduced me to the group, and that's the beginning of this long 6-year project.
Well, and actually the beginning of the story goes back into the 70s, 60s and 70s, when the program first unfolded. And Tim, that's where you came into the picture. Let's talk about what it was like in the beginning when you were part of the team that was charged with training these Hmong pilots to begin flying, as I understand it, some old U.S. aircraft that were being retired.
These airplanes we were flying, the T-28, had been developed and built back in the early 1950s. So by the time I was flying them in the early 70s, they were already 20 years old and well used, especially those that had been in combat theaters. And I didn't actually come into the scene of this. I know that our operation of training Thai and Lao and Cambodian pilots all began back in the 1960s. And in 1970-71, I taught Vietnamese pilots how to fly the same airplane, but without the combat capabilities, at Teasel Air Force Base in Blexley, Mississippi. And in 71, I volunteered to go to this, I volunteered for top secret mission. I didn't know what it was when I did. And it wound up taking me over to Thailand, where we were based at Udorn Air Force Base, and I flew with the Hmong. And I got there in late 72, in December of 72, and was there December through December of 73. And it, how can I possibly, Chia has done a wonderful job of explaining all that was going on while I was teaching Vietnamese. The students, the Hmong students that I worked with in primarily 1973, were all coming through a pipeline kind of preparation, including, I think, about 30 hours of flight time just to see if they could learn to fly an airplane, and that was run out of the U.S. Embassy, as I understand it. Then Craig Durig and other people were involved in that, I believe, and Nia has documented that in a wonderful way. So when I got there, the program was fairly well established. What was different from teaching the Vietnamese and working with the Hmong is we were teaching the Hmong not only how to fly, but how to fly combat. We were not teaching them to the same extent that we taught the Vietnamese. We taught them only what they were going to need in order to fly well, deliver the ordnance, and survive it. And the Vietnamese, we were teaching them a whole lot more about instrument flying and everything else. It took a lot longer to teach the Vietnamese than it did to teach these Hmong pilots. But pretty much each one of us instructors were assigned a student, and we worked with that student until he earned his wings. He might have flown 5 or 10 missions during the whole time with somebody else.
Tim, if I could interrupt, why was it so important that you train Hmong pilots? This was a program that was being sponsored by the U.S. I mentioned the CIA connection. Couldn't American pilots have done the same?
Chia does a great job of documenting all of this also, that at the time, all of the countries involved in the Southeast Asia War had proclaimed a kind of neutrality in Laos. We all know very clearly that the communist North Vietnamese we're not observing that at all. And a lot of the communist Chinese, it was a big charade. Some of my friends have joked, the only people who really did not know about what was going on in Laos were the American people. Everybody else knew. Everybody else in the world knew. And so we were training Hmong pilots to fly combat over there because they knew the terrain. They knew how to operate. If an American pilot were to go down, and a few did go down in Laos, it was a very different kind of situation to handle it publicly, I guess I would say. And so all of this was part of Nixon's Vietnamization of the war, is what it was called back then. That's why I was training Vietnamese first and then moved into the training of Hmong pilots.
So that's a really good summary. And I think that the key thing to remember is, as Tim mentioned, is that Laos was a neutral country. There were American advisors and advisors from other countries as well allowed to be in Laos. But the reason why American pilots who flew, the danger was that, if they went down, and then we would have to admit that the United States was actually there. So that's the reason why the program, Water Pump, is the code name for this project. And it wasn't just Hmong pilots, just to be clear. It was, Lao and other pilots who came to train as well. Hmong were just part of that larger program. And the reason for the training of local pilots is that it's the close air support. We know that many B-52s and other aircraft bombed Laos heavily during the war, but the planes were so high. The accuracy, they did excessive damage, but the accuracy in terms of supporting their ground troops was problematic. So that's why these T-28 planes, as the pilots, very articulate, were able to describe, is that they could go really low.
And they knew the countryside.
Exactly.
They were part of the country.
Exactly.
Chio, you have an interesting title for the book, Fly Until You Die. Where did that come from?
So Tim can help add to that, but this is how the title came to be. So it's not, part of the rationale is that many American pilots that I've talked to, and also the ways in which the Hmong pilots describe their experience, is that for American pilots and American, soldiers in general in Vietnam, they go on their tour of duty. When they finish, they return home. But for many Hmong and other Southeast Asians who became engulfed in the larger Vietnam War, is that there's no exit strategy, right? Especially for the Hmong pilots, when they finish training, they go back to work, especially in Military Region 2, the part of the country that Hmong people lived in. They don't get R&R. They fly, and unless they died or they're injured, they continue to fly. So that's where the title comes from.
How many died?
Oh, about half of the, there are about 38 who graduated, but 33 were graduated from T-28 training. And of those, there are 32 that are Hmong and then one Kamu. Kamu is another ethnic minority group in Laos. So there's other Lao pilots who graduated. But in terms of the Hmong, it's a smaller group. And so about half of the pilots died. And some of it are due to, weather, due to the topography. Laos is so vast. The mountains are so vast. And the climate is so strange at times. So you could be flying, and many of the pilots talk about you're flying, and before you know it, the weather changes, and the mountain comes right in front of you. And then, of course, enemy fire, and then, as Tim and I mentioned briefly, aircraft malfunction was one of the reasons as well. So many different reasons why the such high casualty.
Tim, did the pilots that you trained, were they aware of the risks?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these guys that I was especially working with had already seen the great, I think it was even a majority maybe at that point, of their predecessors had already died in combat or in accidents or whatever. And so part of what we were doing is training replacements for General Van Powell to have at his disposal as he was combating the communist insurgency there in Laos.
Chia, these pilots, after they the war ended. I won't say that they finished their tour of duty because, as you point out, it was an endless tour. They were there in for the long haul. How did they escape? How difficult was it for them to make their way from Laos here to the United States, where ultimately you ended up conducting interviews with them?
Sure. So many of the pilots were individuals who had worked with Americans. So like the other, you know, thousands of refugees who fled, they also spent time in refugee camps. But for most of the pilots, they actually were airlifted to Thailand in a very special air operation that the CIA carried out in May 1975. So most of them actually were airlifted in their families. But there's a few who crossed by themselves, especially, you know, individuals like Kuo Xiong, who was one of the pilots who was injured. So he wasn't actively in the CIA's secret base that we often talk about, Longcheng. So he left on his own and a couple others as well. And then one of the only POW, the only Hmong pilot who served as a POW, he actually was not released in 1973 nor 1975. We all know that the war ended for the United States in 1973 with the peace agreement. It allowed the United States to disengage. But the war didn't really end for the people in Southeast Asia until 1975. As you probably remember, the fall of Saigon in April 30, 1975, and then the trickle
dramatic
effect. Yeah.
Pictures of helicopters,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And then
picking people off roofs.
Yeah, so Pao Ying is the POW who will remain imprisoned until several years after 1975, and then he finally escaped and then came across the river like the thousands of other refugees. So for some of the pilots who were airlifted in 1975, they were called a priority group where they were paroled into the United States. These were individuals who had worked with Americans. There were documentations that they had worked with Americans. So some of the pilots, including Ya Li, who was Tim's student, that there's a very, very powerful story about their relationship in the book, which I'm not going to give away completely. But they all, you know, lived in the refugee camp, applied for resettlement in the United States like other refugees, and ended up being dispersed all over the country.
Well, I do want Tim to talk a bit about that relationship because it's very special, as described in the book. Tim, tell us your memories, your personal memories of working with these Hmong pilots.
Well, as I said before, I had been working with Vietnamese pilots. So when I got to Thailand, I was assigned Ya Li. Back then, we called him Li Ya. And I talked to him all the time and said, Li Ya. Do this, do that, but I knew how to operate with men who had limited English, who needed to learn how to fly, and more importantly, knew how to think and analyze situations while they were flying. Anybody can learn the mechanics of flying, but the thinking part is the difficult part to teach. Well, Li Ya just. He just amazed me with his incredible intelligence and his motivation to learn. I had just not observed many students demonstrate that in my time. So one day we were getting ready to go out and fly, and I had learned to, as soon as I could trust Li Ya with something, I would send him and I would let him do it. And show them that I trusted him on it. And that was part of the learning process that I was trying to accelerate with him. And I went out to the airplane after he had gone out ahead of me to get things ready and do the pre-flight. And he was whistling a tune that it turned out it came upon a midnight clear. And it was a beautiful day. Chia was talking about the weather over there. It was tough flying conditions, especially in Laos, and it was just one of these sky blue days that I think it was the only day like that I can remember having over there. And so he was whistling that song, and I said, "That's strange. I've heard a lot of their music, and it doesn't sound like that." And we got into the airplane, and I started talking to him. I said, "Where did you learn that?" And he said, "Oh, sir, I am a Christian." And I had just become a Christian myself, and I just said, wow, yeah, I didn't know that. And from that point on, our relationship changed from being a student and instructor to being brothers. And I had never had that relationship with any other student that I had ever flown with, probably 15 or 20 total that I instructed while I was in the Air Force. And it just became a whole different relationship together. And when he graduated, I gave him a lot of stuff. I gave him my parents' address because I figured they would not be moving and I would be. And so through all of that, Yah got in contact with me in 1976 while he was in a refugee camp in Thailand. And starts the first line in his letter, I'll never forget it, said, I don't know if you remember me or not.
And you did.
Oh, my goodness. I had been praying for the guy and praying for all of my students in both Vietnam and Laos all of that time. And I have now reconnected with one of my Vietnamese students even just in the last year. But anyway, that relationship was nothing like what I had with Leah.
That's a wonderful story. Chia, you traveled around the country, our country, the U.S., interviewing these pilots, these former pilots, for research as you put this book together, The Fly Until You Die. Tell us, how do they feel today? Are they proud of what they did back in those years? Do they look back with fondness or relief to have gotten out of there? What sort of memories do they carry around with them?
Well, as I describe in the book, there are very mixed feelings for the pilots, the former pilots. And I want to back out just a little bit to talk about how this book is about the Hmong pilots, but it's actually, it includes, you know, widows and family members who have lost, you know, their loved ones who were pilots. So in a way, it's about the Hmong people and their interaction during the war and then what happened to them after and their memories about this particular moment in time. So for many of the pilots, so a total of 43 people is what I interview, and 13 of those are the former pilots themselves. And there are a few instructor pilots like Tim and then other American pilots who flew with them. And also, you know, the CIA, Bill Lehrer was the CIA, you know, operative who actually orchestrated this whole, you know, involvement of Hmong pilots. And I actually spent a weekend with him before he passed away in Meridian, Texas, actually. So for the Hmong and, you know, family members who I interviewed, I mean, I went all the way from, you know, Minnesota to, you know, Illinois in Midwest, but then I traveled to Michigan, Massachusetts, North and South Carolina, Florida also, and in Georgia and in California, a number of trips to the West Coast. And I think your question is really interesting because I often think about that impact and how people remember the war. And for many of the pilots, there's two ways to summarize this. Some of them are, you know, they're thankful that they're alive, right, and that they're still here today. But for others, when they think about the loss of life, the loss of their fellow pilots, and the impact on our people collectively, then many feel that, you know, war is war. And in fact, when people die, you know, nobody really wins because people die and you can't bring them back. But then there is also a sense of gratefulness for some of the pilots who talked about, yes, we sacrificed so much, the ones who passed away, who were killed. But at the same time, it completely changed Hmong people's history forever, where we were able to struggle, but we were able to come to the United States. And some people still struggle a great deal in this country. But then the kinds of opportunities that we have been given, including myself, you know, they're very proud of the opportunities that we've been given. So it's for the children. That's what they talk about when they talk about the only benefit, right, is that we were able to change, you know, this wonderful opportunities for our people.
Have any of these pilots been able to go back or have wished to go back to their country?
Some of them have returned to visit, but some of them have not. And I would like to say that as I was traveling around the country to interview them, some, you know, there's a few that still, like other American, you know, veterans as well, depending on how traumatic that experience is for them, and some of them still live in fear. I feel they're a little bit suspicious of, you know, all kinds of things. So some don't want to go back.
Because they fled for their lives.
Exactly.
And so the question is, would it even be safe to go back today?
But I would also like to say that Laos has changed a great deal, too. So let's just be very clear about that. You know, there's a lot of changes in the United States, and there's a lot of changes in Laos as well. So some of the pilots have been back. They travel. They go visit, you know, the areas that they knew well. And so it's pretty safe for many of them. They've gone back. But there is still a fear of, you know, what would happen to them. I mean, people, we sort of internalize these fears, and whether or not it's real, it's there because that's their lived experience. So some of them actually don't want to go back.
Tim and Chia, this is just such a remarkable story. I want to let our listeners know that if they're interested, coming up on April 12th, Friday, April 12th, from 4 to 8 p.m. on the UWM campus in the Student Union Ballroom, there's actually going to be a program that explores the very, very themes that that you have covered so wonderfully in the book. It's headlined War, Memory, and Healing, a Community Conversation, and a Book Celebration. So listeners who might want to meet you, Chia, hear more about Tim's story and the story of all of the others who were part of this remarkable occurrence back in the 60s and 70s can come to UWM and actually have a conversation that delves into the personal side of the suffering and some of the triumph that took place.
Yep, absolutely. So it will be a public event. So everyone is invited, you know, young and the old. We welcome all to come and learn about this history, this story. And the best thing is that it may not ever happen again. And I say this because several of the former pilots, you know, they're ill, so they can't travel to join us. But a total of eight of them, including Tim, will be here, and they will share some of their experiences. But it's not really about coming to listen to them talk, because they've already spoken in the book. So it's about celebrating them, remembering and honoring them, and also remembering the people who made the ultimate sacrifice. So we welcome everyone to come. I have put together a short documentary of the process of researching this. And so some of the pilots, you'll hear more than just those eight voices. So please come. Everyone is welcome.
Again, the name of the book is Fly Until You Die, An Oral History of Hmong Pilots in the Vietnam War by Professor Chia Yuyi Vang, a member of UWM's History Department. That's all for this week's program. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Mujak.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Mujak, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.